Oh boy! All right. Well, we have the man himself in the house. I'm just going to push this little sting.
You're listening to Audio Culture on 95BFM.
Thanks to Audio Culture, Iwi Waiata, the Noisy Library of New Zealand Music. Go to audioculture.co.nz.
Well, it's Saturday night and I just got paid. Fool about my money, don't try to save. My heart say go, go, have a time, cause Saturday night, now I'm feeling fine. I'm gonna rock it up, I'm gonna rip it up, I'm gonna shake it up.
There we go, we got to the chorus that made the point.
Yes, yes, a song about young men spending all their money on beer, you know, having a good time.
Well, you know, I think there are worse things to write about, you know. That song is called Rip It Up by Little Richard. We were just talking about biopics. There hasn't been a biopic. I did see a documentary about Little Richard recently.
Yeah, there's also a made-for-TV one that you can find on YouTube of Little Richard from about 10 years ago, a drama made for TV, and it's quite good.
Is it? Better than the documentary, maybe. I didn't love the documentary.
Yeah,
quite fabulous enough or something.
Yeah, the doco was okay, but it was actually best on the formative years, maybe, which sort of become a little irrelevant. But it was good to see him having been on stage with burlesque performers.
Yeah, drag.
Yeah, and just crazy stuff.
Yeah.
And, so that was good.
Kind of a sad ending to see him, like, reformed, so to speak, and kind of, like, you know, living the conservative life. Probably, hopefully... I mean, hopefully he was happy. God, who knows? But it's not what we're here to talk about.
No, no.
But we could. I am very, very pleased to be joined by Murray Kamik, the one and only, really. How do you like to be referred to, Murray? Which of your many, many hats and ties do you want to be referred to as?
Well, I'm mainly, I guess, the publisher and sometimes editor of Rip It Up, really. But, you know, I took photos and over the years and whatever.
Including at my parents' wedding, which I love to remember.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
But not as famous for that. More famous for Rip It Up magazine, which is what we're here to talk about. They have Audio Culture is hosting all. Is it true all of the Rip It Up magazines are now online?
Well, it's not quite all. It's still up. It's up to 98. 98, and I think they've gone to sort of when I left. I think. So the ones they've just put up are 1986 to 1998, and there's an Audio Culture story too where we chose all the New Zealand covers that were there, and I put a little story behind however many there were in terms of selecting the act and what influences, you know, how you got the photo and why it's really, really shitty quality or why it's quite good.
Tell us, how did Rip It Up start?
Well, it was just in 77 after Hot Licks folded the year before, which was free for most of its life. Hot Licks was put out by Direction Records. They had a bit more money behind them than us, but we heard someone else was going to try and do a magazine, so we sort of rushed one out in mid-June to try and claim the ground.
You know? And is it true that the first big story was Split Enz on the road?
No. Well, there was a story, a letter from London from Eddie, but the big story was Commodore's photos in the middle, I guess. And we interviewed Mark Williams as an interview, but the cover photo was Commodore's.
Oh, right. There's a New Zealand connection with the Commodores, isn't there?
Well, Ronald LaPrad has lived here for many, many years, since the 90s or 80s. He, on a New Zealand tour, I think, he met his wife and has, settled here most of the time.
Well, how about that? I do take a lot of diversions, I'm sorry, Maria, but the thing is, you've got such an incredible wealth of knowledge. I just don't get many opportunities to tap it, so I'm speed dating.
That's all right. No, just whatever.
Yeah, whatever indeed.
Can I complain then about tall men and biopics? I've just been to see the Bob Marley story, which is a tall Bob Marley story, and a week ago I saw Priscilla with a really tall Elvis. And if they're going to have tall people, can they just not shoot above the waist? Because it looks really stupid when there's really tall legs in the film and saying, "Fuck, that's not Bob Marley."
You know, I had never really thought. I have to say, one thing I've never thought about Bob Marley was his height. But you've seen him play, haven't you?
Photographed him. I met him. He asked me to play soccer, and you know, only because I was taking photos, and he'd probably not like me to take photos because I went and got the ball and I handed it to him, and I said no, thank you. But yeah.
Well, that, then you know he was probably not that tall. Is that true?
Yeah, well, he's just average height.
Average height.
Yeah, but it's silly.
Like you and me.
It's silly when he's towering over his manager and he's towering over his wife and he's towering over everybody. And and no wonder they can't have Peter Tosh in, because Peter Tosh was about 6.5 feet, you know, so he towered over Bob.
Yeah.
Anyway, forget about that. Sorry.
Wow. Was it a... I don't know if the movie looks quite bad to me.
No, it's I think it's enjoyable. Uh-huh. I did like it. And it's outrageously successful in the USA. It's number one there at the moment. A lot of movies, you know, music movies, just don't even get any audience. But it's doing well. And I saw the audience breakdown. It was about 40% black. Then the next biggest group was Latin. And the next biggest group, about 20%, was white. And then Asians.
Hmm. Well, how about that?
But over 40% black was interesting. Hmm.
Yeah, well, that Bob Marley having another moment, nothing wrong with that.
No, it's great.
I guess I was slightly put off by the trailer, but, you know, woe betide someone who only trusts a trailer. Maybe we could talk about your magazine a little bit more if you want to. I'm a river here.
Well, the point is with these 1986 to 1998 issues going online, it's the big day out years and the grunge years, so you can see every year of the big day out coverage. And I actually was speaking to Doug Hood the last week, and he pointed out something interesting, that the first year of big day out they only sold 15,000 tickets, and they were nearly all in the last week.
Really?
Yeah, so he had almost no ticket sales before the last week. I guess people are looking at the sky and thinking, will it rain? You know?
Oh, man. I tell you what, I'm a gig promoter these days and bring bands to New Zealand, and there is just about nothing more nerve-wracking than the wonderful New Zealand habit of buying tickets at the last minute. So it is quite reassuring to hear it's always been that way, and that we're not all just turning psycho.
No, well, traditionally it's been like that, but I did speak to, Lisa Tilley said Ragamuffin used to sell out in advance, and people were saying Laneway wasn't selling this year, and it did incredibly well.
Yeah.
So I guess later on Big Day Out sold out pretty quickly.
But yeah, I think possibly, especially with something that if it's the first time, you may not know what the urgency is all about.
Yeah, so the big day out grunge years are all covered in this lot of rip it up that's gone online.
Mm.
So, which is good.
Yeah, and so do you have any particularly fond memories of any issues that have gone up? Have you found some issues that you'd maybe point some people to and go, if you're wanting to jump online and not be too daunted, where would you send them? Like, go look for the blah 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 cover.
Oh, well, I was just writing about the covers, you know, but...
You have a favourite cover?
Oh, well, the Jan Hal Regal cover was one of those sessions where the photographer just came back with gold. And there's a few covers where, you know, the photographer is paid quite well and you just look at every photo and just think they're all so boring. And usually that's with a band, you know, when you're trying to make four people look interesting.
Four people look in different directions meaningfully.
Yeah, and what's way worse than trying to make four people look good is five. Five is just, it is 10 times bigger problem than four.
Wow, there's some interesting maths there. But, so...
No, oh, just one other
thing.
Yeah,
go for it. I like the Dalvanius one, which is why I'm playing the Dalvanius right now.
Oh, right. That cover was a bit sparse at the time, but we were free, you know. That was a very strong cover.
Yeah,
you know?
It was, and strong, I thought.
Like I actually did put Del Venus and the Fascination on the cover of Crack'em in about 1976 maybe, and I thought that cover was a lot better than the Rip It Up one. But what was I going to say? Oh, there's this funny thing you learnt as an editor.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, you know how people leave bands?
Yeah.
So a PR photo becomes
redundant.
The person who leaves is always on the edge of the last PR photo. They're never in the middle.
Right.
You know, that's why they left.
Right.
So they're always on the end, and you just chop them off.
Chop them off. Rewrite history.
And you've got the photo.
Oh, that's good.
Current photo. Anyway.
Have you got any, have you been sort of revisiting any kind of happy memories and or like kind of wild memories of people you spoke to at the time or, you know, wrote about that kind of had an impact on you?
Well, meeting Bob Marley, I've just been to see the film, so meeting Bob Marley's a bit in my face at the moment, and appreciating that he was not just another musician writing pop songs, you know what I mean? He was writing stuff that was really, he was a leader, cultural leader. And
was it the Western Spring Show? Am I remembering that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You've got some. I'm sure you've got some amazing photos. Oh, that's right. There was a T-shirt of your photograph.
Yeah. But that was at the Welcome. But there's still Bruce Jarvis. Quite a few people took photos of that. And right at the end of the film, there's just a few images from Dylan Tate's interview from TV. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I was hoping I'd be there, but I wasn't. he used me as a cutaway shot, but there was no cutaway shot.
Oh, get your money back.
Yeah.
How fascinating. Oh, there's some shows like that I just think, like, you know, we'd see that David Bowie Moon Age Daydream movie. And
yeah.
I know you're not always a big David Bowie fan, but... Oh, no, just one time I was DJing one time and you came over and you were like, didn't like the song.
Oh.
And it was a song I'd recently discovered off Young Americans.
Oh.
I just think it wasn't your favourite period.
Oh.
But this is why I like to have a good conversation about something and question things, you know?
Yeah, well, those David Bowie shows, particularly that 1978 one, was it 1978 at Western Springs with and Adrian Belew was phenomenal.
Mm.
But I think the Let's Dance Serious Moonlight show was pretty good too.
I think that's the one that's in the movie. Have you seen that, Moon Age Daydream?
Yeah, definitely. I wanted to see that film because I got the impression that there were quite a few remixes of the songs, and I do enjoy the fact that in these modern biopics that there is audio created for a good cinema, you know.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed that with the Bob Marley.
Yeah, right. I could. Mm. So with the Bob, I know this is not why you're here, but I am kind of interested in a bit obsessed with movies and music. So
there's
a good combo of things to talk about.
Yeah.
Did they use his real voice, or was it the guy doing an impression?
A mixture of both, I think.
Right.
Yeah, they said it was a mix of both. I guess if he's depicted singing while sitting on the couch, they'll use the actor's voice.
Yeah.
But if they're getting the impression of a concert, I guess they're using Bob's voice.
Right.
But I think it varies sometimes, like with the Elvis movie, they had to use the actor's voice until they got to a period where there were 24 track vocals.
Yeah, right. Oh, good.
I don't understand audio, but, you know.
No, I like it. I like it when I hear it.
Yeah.
So tell us, a little bit more about Rip It Up, because I have just sort of dragged us away to this. There's a whole bunch of really cool stuff up on Audio Culture you can really get lost in, not just the magazines themselves, but speaking of the magazines themselves, is it literally everything, including all the ads, every single page?
Yeah, like I'm pretty sure the ads are there. That sounds ignorant, but usually if I Google, I just put a name for the information I want. And so I'm not always seeing the ads. I'm seeing, a specific writer or whatever. You know?
Yeah. Oh, well.
There's also another story on Audio Culture that's interesting that's just appeared. I think it's in the last few weeks. I just noticed it a few weeks ago where they profile some of the writers that were key writers at the time. I think Simon Gregg did it with Chris Burke.
Yeah.
Just because maybe our coverage hasn't noted the many writers that were pivotal but moved on, you know, were part of the magazine for a year or two.
Mm. Right. I'm just scrolling through and seeing faces like William Dart, who, when I worked at Real Groovy about 20 years ago, was a regular customer, looking quite different here when brooding with his dark beard. There's some people like, who are some people you remember from the Rip It Up years?
You mean the writers?
Yeah.
Well, there were numerous, but the very final one was John Russell, who did, you know, the 94 onwards sort of grunge years, and he was into hip-hop in New Zealand. Russell Brown was probably the most standout one with his embracing of all the Flying Nun stuff. Plus, he also was very into going on the road with the Mockers or the Exponents and seeing if he could keep up with their drinking. Or he went to a Crusaders game with Roger Shepherd and tried to keep up with Roger Shepherd's drinking. So and Donny Yuzwalk, who did the sort of hair metal grunge years, and so everybody had their specialty. Chris Burke did the story, the Delvanias cover that you mentioned. Mm. Chris was actually the editor for a couple of years, and you know, I have to admit I wasn't too keen on that cover. I thought it, you know...
Sorry to bring it up.
Wasn't very rock and roll, but...
I just like him.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it definitely, I would like to show you the old Kraken one I did, but then mine was a live photo and the portrait photographer didn't have the opportunity to do that.
So. Oh, fair enough. Mike Chun?
Yeah, well, he wrote for us in the first few issues.
That's right. You know,
and that was really like... We thought Spillions were just superstars, so to have Mike Chun, a member of Spillions, writing for us was a great honour, and we'd just come out of university, so William Dart, who was a university lecturer who used to do lunchtime lectures on things like Jefferson Airplane or something like that, you know, I don't recall ever going, but Alistair Dougal, who was the first editor and co-publisher with me, he used to go to these William being academic about pop music.
I like it, you know, someone's got to do it. That's so cool. Well, I reckon we're going to jump to some bad news from around the world in a minute, but I think we should sort of direct people to audioculture.co.nz, and there are at least two things, but maybe we'll come back after the news and
I'll be here, and there's Papers Passed, Rip It Up, we'll also take you directly to those.
Well, we'll come back in 2 seconds. We'll have some lovely news. Anika's gone away and found some of the most charming stories that there are available to the world. Here we go.
That was Audio Culture on 95BFM.
Thanks to Audio Culture, Iwi Waiata, the Noisy Library of New Zealand Music. Go to audioculture.co.nz. It's just
fascination. That's right. We will be back with a couple more bits of chit-chat, but I figure, should we maybe have this news? All right, we've got Murray Cameron back in the house. I'm going to play a song that is loosely affiliated with what we've been talking about. And if you can guess who the song is by without Shazamming it, and there's no way I would know, then I will give you a double pass to Morningside Live. There you go. More on that in a minute, but you tell me who this is, and I will pick a winner if you give me your name, Angel B-Cat. Here we go. On March the 31st, by the way, it's for Kingy, Avondale Bowling Club, Beths, and more. Thanks to soon. Well, there we go. That was indeed Split Enz, wasn't it? Hang on. That was Split Enz with the Choral Sea, not a song that I can always get a kick out of playing that to people and saying, guess who this is. Yeah. So, Murray.
I have no idea when that song was released.
It was on True Colours.
Really?
I think, yeah. Let me have a look.
Well, I obviously only know the hits.
Yeah, well, I am a huge fan of finding, like, weird songs by famous people, you know, and kind of like, who the heck is this? So, we will announce the winner shortly. I have quite a few people texted in for that one. So, but I'd like to carry on having a wee chat, if that's all right. So, rip it up. Now, for people who've only just arrived on Earth, we used to have magazines. Yeah. Mm. And it was kind of a good time, because you could just pick something up and read it. Look at some pictures.
Yeah, well, that era, like, I'm just sort of shocked that in the USA, all the magazines are just so skinny now because they don't have many ads, you know,
oh, right.
A lot of them. And in New Zealand, we had a lot of alternative titles at one point. There were a lot in the sort of 90s and noughties, and I was running Wildside Records for a while, and it was great to have these other titles you could get your acts on the cover, you know. I'm just having trouble remembering some of the names of those
Who was on Wildside when under your watch?
On the Rip It Up cover, do you
mean? No, on the label, just so we can paint a picture for people.
It's sort of She Had Head Like a Hole, Dead Flowers, Pumpkin Head, Stylus, and a few others. And we also had a few punk bands on a label called Felix, sort of Muckhole and Future Stupid and stuff. So there was quite a lot of them.
Yeah. I forgot about Stylus.
They were quite late era.
Yeah, they were.
They were almost the last of the bands I worked.
What was the singer's name again?
Look, I can think of the bass player, Paul Matthews.
And so you were saying off air that you had a kind of a quandary on your hands because you were Rip It Up, but also you were the record label, and you thought, how do I remedy this, or like, how do I balance this?
Yeah, well, I'd have to be careful on what Wildside or Southside acts I chose to put on the Rip It Up cover. They had to, I felt I had to reflect the local music biz thinking they deserved a cover, and I also had to keep with the sort of nature of Rip It Up, you know. So I tended to just put them on the cover when an album was released, and in the case of She Hadn't Head Like a Hole, and then in the case of Dead Flowers, I put them on the cover when their first album was released, but the second and third albums, I just didn't think there was enough buzz for the bands at that time to warrant putting them on the cover.
So I got slightly distracted by when you said Southside. Can you tell me, that was another label you had?
Yeah, well, that was before Wildside, and I guess our biggest hit was Nairi, which was just pure pop, you know. It's a cover of To Sir With Love, and we had hits with Defection and Moana and the Moa Hunters, which I also saw in the pop sort of category. So I never put any of those acts on the cover of Rip It Up.
I had a memory about Moana and Moa Hunters from the early 90s that there was a story going around that Moana had had a song declined from a major radio station because it was in Te Reo, and this is a heavy quote unquote, not my quote, they said they didn't play foreign language music. Do you remember that story?
I don't recall that. We had a lot of different responses. We had situations where we would phone Iwi Radio, and they said, "Oh, we don't like this sort of stuff. Have you got anything like Tom Jones or Engelbert Humperdinck?"
Right,
you know,
the other direction of problem,
the other area of. But there were tracks where, like the first few years of She Had or Head Like a Hole, they weren't pop radio or rock. You know, we just knew we wouldn't get them on the radio. Mm. And some Moana tracks, we knew we'd be totally struggling to get on the radio anyway. But see, the point was, you were talking about all the fact that there's all these independent magazines. We had Max TV and Cry TV in Christchurch. So the fact that we couldn't get the rock, or I'm sure in the case of Moana, that's about the same time. We would get her videos heavily, I'm sure, on Max TV and Cry TV, and she hosted some kids' TV show on TV3, you know, and she'd have all our heavy rock acts on, like Hallelujah Picasso, She Had, Head Like a Hole and stuff. I don't recall She Had, but, you know, And I remember there being there one morning, you know, early, because I had a band there, and meeting Inga the Winger. And
right. Well, that's the thing, is one of the other wonderful things about the New Zealand music scene, and I always hesitate to call it an industry because that's other people's jobs.
Yeah.
The music scene is so, like, you know, when it's at its best, genre is relatively meaningless and people are just engaging with each other and having, you know, good relationships and kind of having that common cause. That's been my favourite periods of New Zealand music, is when people just sort of, you know, there's not any rules.
Yeah, I think I of course grew up in an era where there was just pop music, and then there was this thing that was a bit more adventurous called rock or underground music, but initially it was just all pop. And is there anything more pop than the Kinks? But they, in theory, wrote the first heavy metal song, didn't they?
I do love the Kinks.
But the name heavy metal, I don't know how long it was. Like when I was doing Land of the Good Groove in the 80s on BFM, we played rap music, you know. And I think someone like Otis and Mark were going to start a hip-hop show, and I said, "What's hip-hop?"
Nice.
So the categories are, I'm not always the first one to know.
No, but you know what you like.
Something like that.
Oh, fantastic. All right, well, I can see ahead of me many things that must be done in boxes that must be ticked. I could talk to you for hours, Murray, and perhaps again, we will. But let's just make one more call to action for people to go and check out.
The Rip It Up is on Papers Past. Now, I like from 77 to 85 has been there, but now on Papers Past, it's probably paperspast.government.nz or whatever. Google will tell you that the 1986 to 98 issues are there, and that's the grunge era and lots of good New Zealand music and hip-hop emerging in New Zealand, and it was a very exciting time, and it's all online.
Read about where it all started rather than just the kind of the headlines.
And also Audio Culture.
Yeah, exactly.
.co.nz has the story about the covers, the New Zealand covers from 86 to 98.
Yeah, of which some I love and some you don't, and some you do and some others don't. I'm sure there's, like, the wonderful thing about it, you can start some conversations about these photographs.
There's a song that says, "Regrets, I have a few," and a few of them are Rip It Up covers. So.
Oh, well, luckily beauty's in the eye of the beholder, and so is sort of magazine cover taste. Hey, someone made a good point that if someone wants to actually hold some magazines in their hand and have a good nosy, you can go to the Auckland Library. Very, very good point there. There's some good archives as well. Thank you, Murray Kamak. You have many hats, and we have a lot to thank you for, not in the least of which is coming in today and having a chat.
And this hat is probably the worst, but it keeps my ears set, sheltered from the sun.
See ya. Yeah, see ya, Murray. Thanks a lot. This